Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, building the collective conscious. A show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. I'm your co-host, Michael Eric Owen.
And I'm your co-host, DT.
Hey, how you doing today?
Man, I'm doing great today. I woke up this morning feeling good. I know that warm weather is around the corner.
They say it's coming.
It's Black History Month. My birthday is coming up in a little while. I got a lot to look forward to.
Black History Month. It's exciting time. Man, there's so many programs going on during Black History Month that it's like, you know, I mean, why do we jam? Yeah, why do we jam everything into one month?
I thought about this earlier this morning, thinking, you know, why do we focus? I know why we do, but why can't we focus, you know, all year, have little projects all year, all month long, you know, things, little seminars, programs, things to get people talking, or, you know,
absolutely,
whatever. But like you're saying, for it to be an ongoing thing, not just this jam-packed month where we have to stuff all of our creativity and talent and all these accomplishments we've done in one. And it's the shortest month that
it's the shortest month. And the phone just start ringing off the hook. You know, folks want you on panels.
Yeah.
They want you to speak. They want you to attend this program. And every year, man.
Want you to talk about relationships.
Yeah, everything. Everything during Black History Month. But, you know, I will say this, and I've said this on many occasions, Black History, just having Black History Month was never the goal. I mean, we have to move beyond. Black history is American history.
It's world history.
It's world history. And so I don't know when we can transition. You know, some would argue that the very fact that we are relegated to a month, you know, further prevents us from being infused into the larger culture. I don't know, man. What do you think?
Who's stopping us from celebrating all year long? I mean, the people who are complaining aren't also doing something about it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's easy to say, well, we only have a month, or we only have this. Where's the rule that says that?
Yeah, where's the limitations written down that we can't go beyond this month? Well, again, Black history is American history. Some of the greatest inventions were created by Black people in this country. And so the narrative should share all of our history together.
And even going back to what you said about, you know, it being more than just about the history. You know,
yeah.
I think we look throughout the history and we're looking for the heroes and pull out the glory stories.
Yeah.
But what did these people really represent? You know, what did they really believe in?
Mm-hmm.
And why
mm-hmm.
do we hold them to such a high standard now?
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, now it's Black History Month. We recognize these people, but why?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, what's the deeper story there?
Yeah. What's the significance of it all? I mean, I think back to our show where we did the real Dr. King and how we focused in on him and kind of, you know, tried to pull away the layers of, you know, this fantasy, fanatical way of looking at Dr. King.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of good feedback from that show, man. I mean, I think most people think he was a very, you know, docile kind of person and didn't understand that he was very radical.
Yeah.
I mean,
wasn't a pushover.
No. He wasn't a push. He didn't punch you though.
Yeah, he wasn't gonna
smack
you.
Yeah, he wasn't gonna smack you like Mark, like Malcolm, Malcolm. Like Brother Malcolm. But it's interesting,
stop
man.
Singing and start swinging.
Yeah, and stop singing. And you know, I had mentioned, I think about the brother that had posted about the things that Malcolm had said about King and how King had failed his own race, and how I felt, you know, both of them evolved over time.
Yeah.
And that the goal was the same. You know, the goal was was for Blacks to take, you know, their proper seat right alongside their white, Hispanic, you know, Asian, Native American brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still trying to move that along. And, man, you know, I just want to talk a little bit, man. Shout out to Oklahoma. From the University of Central Oklahoma, man, for having me as their keynote speaker for their Black History program. Shout out to the Black Student Association.
They showed up, didn't they?
Yeah, it was packed, man.
I was
wow. Yeah, it was.
Look at all these beautiful black folks. Yeah, yeah. But they showed up to hear that message, man, to get some information. And it was really encouraging to see young people so active and involved in these type of things that are that are going on in the community. So shout out to UCO.
Yeah,
you guys did a beautiful job. It was an amazing situation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, in the hospitality and the way they treated us, and me and DT had a chance to go ahead and have lunch and to sit and talk and just kind of,
which
we
also
say,
brought up some interesting conversations.
As we say back in the day, rap about some things. But yeah, it did bring up some interesting conversations at the table.
Yeah.
and so you know, what I said was shocking. I didn't know I only had like 20 or 30 minutes to speak.
Yeah,
so I was prepared to go for about an hour.
maybe longer.
and usually if you at a gala, you know that. But sometime at the program, you know, they give you an hour. I remember my mom heard me speak one time and she said to me, I said, how was it? She said, yeah. She said, son, it was good. She said, but it was short. I said, what you mean? She said, no, I'll give the people an hour, baby.
So what do you think now? Like, they may be playing to the attention span of the younger generation? Is it that they can keep the attention longer than 30, 40 minutes?
Well, how long are classes? You know, I just think it's you know, it's in a lecture format.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to think that I am somehow, you know, engaging in somewhat, so to speak. And my message, America, you must wake up. Yeah, it got quiet in there for a while.
It was deep, though, man.
Like, I was like, man, DT, we're going to have to make a fast exit or what, man? I should have had Richard with the car outside,
think,
you know?
I think when you're receiving a heavy message, you have to just take it in, and I think that's might have been what was happening there.
Yeah, and, you know, I got some good feedback, man. They said they were processing
it. Was a beautiful message.
Know? I mean,
man,
hold on,
I got to ask you about this, because as somebody who was there attentively listening, you made a quote by in the early beginning, I don't know the quote's name, author's name, but it alluded to the fact that you know, as we gain compassion within ourselves, we gain vulnerability to experience the pain of other people.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
could you talk about that just for a second and what that quote meant to you in that message?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I believe it's Kim Song that says. And I'll be paraphrasing this idea that when we become vulnerable, we allow ourselves to become vulnerable, we can then have empathy and enter into the pain of others. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it that's such a deep, you know, quote, because we're challenged by understanding the position of someone else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but to make yourself vulnerable, in order to put yourself in that person's position and then to experience their pain, that's where transformation comes. That's when you go, well, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I can even feel that, you know. Let's just take example, racial profiling, for instance. People say that doesn't exist, this, that, and the other thing. But when you make yourself vulnerable and say, look, let me think about me or my child being put in that position, being pulled over, being afraid, okay, being handcuffed, simply because of the skin that they're in, your perception changes revolving around racial profiling.
Mm-hmm.
You see, that's what that quote is about. And I think that when we can enter into the pain of others willingly, that's the key. You know, I don't have to force you into it. I mean, you are doing it yourself because you want to understand my plight and what I'm going through.
Now, I've seen that too, is like in one aspect of it is like being able to have empathy, being able to feel the pain of others in that connected type of way. Because some of us have been through that part of life, you know, have transcended, have moved forward.
Yeah.
We can say, yeah, I feel that because I went through that.
Absolutely.
It's difficult getting people to understand that who have never been through, you know, some of the things that we try to discuss and try to explain. And it's kind of like you're saying, I can't allow myself to feel that person's pain because I haven't lived, you know, in those shoes. But So that's our angle now. How do we transcend to getting people on the empathetic side to be able to say, look, all of us are human beings. All of us are having these experiences. All of us share these similarities, these struggles that we go through. But how do we connect it back together to say, you know, I'm going through the same thing that you are, just in a different way?
Well, you know what? That is a great segue. We're going to take a break here, but we're going to come back. Let me say this. That's a great segue into what we're going to be talking about next, dealing with Cam Newton.
All right.
A response that I had on the book, on the Facebook, book. On the book. So,
oh,
hey, listen,
it was a bad
folks.
Weekend in sports. We'll be right back. This is DT of the One Mic, One Voice podcast. Just want to let you guys know you can go over to iTunes and search us at One Mic, One Voice, and be sure to rate and review our episodes. Let us know about any feedback that you have and what you enjoy about the episodes. Also, you can go over to Stitcher, where you can get the latest and freshest episodes of our podcast streamed directly to your smartphone or iPad. No downloading or syncing. How cool. Real smooth. Also, we'd just like to take the time to thank you for your time and for your energy and for spending time with us as we discuss the historical record of our time.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. Building the collective conscious.
We're back. And yo, so we were just talking about sports and kind of segueing into our topic. But it was a bad weekend in sports, man. The Thunder lost to the self-proclaimed
the Warriors.
Big boys, the Warriors.
You know, we don't talk sports a lot on here, but let me just say.
Did you watch the game? I mean,
man,
are you a basketball
I did.
Fan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I watched the game. Okay. I'm a sports fan, man. Basketball, pro, college, football. You know, I watch all that, man, you know.
They didn't blow us out, though. I was happy.
Oh, we were blowed out, though. We were down
at
by 20.
At one point. Yeah, we came back, though.
But that's the NBA game, though. I mean, I think. And again, I support the Thunder, but let me say this. Lest we get that defense right.
That's true. Can't be this individualized, I'm going to play defense on my man type of thing. We don't have a group.
Because, you know, one can say, well, the Thunder came back and almost won the game. But the reality is, when you up by 20, you don't play as hard.
You take the brakes off.
You don't put the brakes on. Yeah, you don't. You up by 20. You don't. You know, you try to cruise then. And so I think an argument can be made that Golden State just kind of cruised, man.
Could it be argued that the Thunder could have beat the Golden State Warriors, should have kept up the tempo they started the game with? Because if you see in the beginning of the game,
can't do it.
It was a much different game as towards the end and us losing those defensive matchups.
No. NBA games are, you know, you're going to have 15, 20 lead changes in the game. Mm-hmm. And in the end, the best team is going to win. That's one thing I do know. In the end, the best team is going to win. They have to, you know, the Thunder's got a great team. They could win the championship. I'm not going to say they can't, but they have to address their defensive issues, man, because they gave up too many layups, man. I was like. So.
All right. So.
You know, but, you know, OU lost too.
The hometown teams.
Yeah.
Not doing,
you know,
so well.
So, but they're bounced back. OU's got a great team. They're going to go. I think they'll go to the Final Four. I don't know if they'll win it all, but I think they got a quality squad.
They are a tough team.
Yeah,
right,
they got a quality squad. And but the NFL, I mean, really where we want to go to, not about sports.
That was Oklahoma City's Super Bowl. So we'll go on to the
absolutely.
Real deal.
And it's not that we want to talk so much about who won and who lost. We want to talk about just the treatment that Cam Newton has gotten. And let me say this. Let me start this conversation off by saying, I'm not an apologist for Cam Newton, number one. Number two, I'm not really a Carolina. I'm a Green Bay Packer fan.
Yeah.
Now, you know this. You know, Cheesehead. You know, Aaron Rodgers, okay? So I'm going to say that to let you know I'm not on Cam's bandwagon, although I think he's a bad boy.
Yeah,
I mean, he talented. Now, you can't take anything away from his genius, man. I mean, that boy is cold-blooded, right? However, man, just the way he has been treated, even the week of the Super Bowl, he's a young man. He's 26
years
right,
old. Yeah.
Right. What's your thoughts, brother?
Man, I think this kid, man, came out of Atlanta you know, normal African-American upbringing.
Yeah.
Have faced adversity, got through all of it, came back better.
Yeah.
Built itself up to this level professionally, got to the Super Bowl, had an amazing postseason.
Amazing. MVP of the league.
And it's like, man, the message that is sent to us from when we're young to be able to say, you know, you can be somebody, you can do everything that is within you to do, given this. And when you make it, now everybody there to criticize you. And it's like, what did I do this for? You know what I mean? And for them people to build Cam up all the way to this level and then now to tear him down because he lost, because he didn't have the response to the media that they expected him to have.
Yeah.
Now it's all the backlash while also being blinded to the things that happened in the past with quarterbacks and other athletes who were opposite color.
Yeah.
That did the same things.
Yeah. I mean,
and it not being such a big deal.
He was criticized because he gives footballs to young people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
what's so bad about
that? And he gets fined for that.
What?
I mean, he loses. Yeah, he loses money. Wow. Every time he gives away a football, he loses money.
But think about that experience, man. Like, think about paying all that money to be at an NFL event and the interaction you get with an NFL player that's highlighted Cam Newton, threw me a football. As a kid, man, that would give me such a great feeling.
Oh, absolutely, and man.
Why? Why do they do it if they can't have those type of experiences on the field with the fans and with the people who pay their money to support them?
Man, it's a beautiful thing. I have no problem with that. You remember this letter from this Rosemary, I want to say Ploren. She was out of Tennessee, and she had an issue. Mom, angry mom writes letter objecting to Cam Newton's dance moves.
Like, and other quarterbacks have not celebrated.
You know, I mean.
And then you talk about being a cheesehead.
Hey, you know, Aaron Rodgers, he'll do the discount double check on you in a minute. Bam. You know what I'm saying?
Style.
How you like me now? You know,
nobody's apologizing for him.
You know, I don't have a problem. Why is it? This is a double standard that we see. Why is it that a white athlete can celebrate, can get angry, can walk out of a press conference, can do all of that without being criticized? Not just, and he may be criticized in a way, but not demonized. Maybe that's it. You know, maybe it's not a character flaw. He was angry. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the fact that we talk about, you know, when a white person commits a mass act, it is mental health issues. Mm-hmm. But when a Muslim does, it's terrorists.
Yeah, he's crazy.
You know,
you tripping.
So I think, you know, I think this double standard, man, I want to talk about for a minute, and it shouldn't be. And this doesn't play out in the athletic world. You know, for yourself, as a black man, you know, we're somehow supposed to be docile. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't show anger. Mm-hmm. Our passion is viewed as, oh man, look at you! See the way he's moving his hands, or he's angry. I'm afraid now. You see, and I've been told, people are afraid of you. I said, what are they afraid of me for? I speak, I'm polite. I don't raise my voice. I mean, you know, well, they haven't had very many experiences with black men. I said, well, I'm not an experiment. Okay, I'm not. I mean, maybe you need to date one. Maybe you need, I don't know what you need to do, but I'm just not the one for you to analyze. And I just think it's a double standard, man, in our society where we can do the same things, but perceptually it turns into something totally different.
I wonder then, too, like you said about us getting angry and them feeling, I guess, a stronger threat because of it. Is it maybe that expression that we have when we have those intense feelings of anger and, you know, maybe to some others that we're going to explode?
Yeah.
Do you think they share that feeling with us in the sense that they can almost project outcomes when it comes to this person feeling in such a way that now I'm afraid for myself because I can see that this guy is serious about how he feels?
Yeah.
Not that he's just upset about something, but this has, you know, been built up almost.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I mean, it's worthy of some sort of exploration, man. I don't, because I'm on the outside. I mean, and we're trying to figure out why that perception is. I don't know. I just know it exists. I know I've been told more than once.
Like the intention is of act is going to be greater or some, yeah. some way, like you said, demonizing or more harmful because yeah. this person is the one feeling anger now instead of this guy.
Yeah. Instead of, you know, instead of understanding that we all get angry, we all get frustrated, we all get disappointed, we all have these moments, but to not be able to have space to feel like you can be you, or you can be expressive, and then to be judged differently, that's the problem I have. I mean, don't judge me differently than you judge somebody else. Yeah, I have an issue with that. I mean, a person that does the same thing that I do, I mean, it's like, well, Bob can do it. You know, I've even heard, yeah, send Bob. You know, yeah, Bob can get away with it. Why can't I get away with it?
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? I mean, that's the problem I have. And then, you know, on Facebook, you know, man, some reason, DT, I don't know, man. Should I just delete my Facebook account, man? Should I just get out the book, man? Should I just get? Should they just erase me from the book?
I think the problem is that, you know, as a... I don't even know how to put it, but as somebody looking, you know, because people are on Facebook.
Right? Yeah.
Some people are on Facebook, and they use Facebook as like this live diary, right?
Yeah.
So they're constantly just exerting all their thoughts and feelings on everybody, you
yeah.
know, rather you are in the mood to read or not.
Yeah, yeah,
this is
yeah.
what they use it for. Some people on there just to kind of investigate what other people are doing
yeah,
in their day.
Yeah.
Like, oh, such and such is doing this. He went there, you know, whatever. Some people are on there just to hate on other people,
yeah.
you know? And then that's where we find ourselves on that side, you know, trying to defend something with just confronting people who have put themselves on Facebook just to
yeah.
hate on other
yeah,
people.
Yeah, just to
and
read.
So rather or not they agree with your ideas yeah, or your views, yeah, yeah. they might not even fully understand or want to, but they're going to disagree with you because
right.
that's what they come to Facebook
right.
to do.
That's what they do,
I'm
right?
I'm disagreeer.
right. I'm not going to agree with anything
no,
today.
I don't care about what it mean. No. No, I don't. No, I don't like anything you have to say.
This Sean King, he is a senior justice writer for the New York Daily News, had posted something regarding Cam Newton, and I just shared it, man. I don't think I even commented to begin with. I just shared it, right? And he said, I'm gonna read what he says. He says, "Never, not once in my life have I seen a white quarterback, the league MVP in the Super Bowl, no less, call boy. This is not even disguised racism. It is racist, period. Pure ugliness." And he goes, "P.S. In case you didn't know, this came from an NFL legend, and this was by Bill Romanowski. And let me just read the quote. He says, "You will never last in the NFL," talking about Cam Newton, "with that attitude. The world doesn't revolve around you, comma, boy, exclamation mark." So a point. So I just posted it, man.
I mean, what was the particular attitude he was talking about?
Man, I think
is it being upset? Being
yeah.
angry? Is football not aggressive sport?
Exactly. And you lose the biggest game of your career.
Man.
I don't even know how you're disappointed. You're angry. Maybe you didn't. I'm sure Cam didn't feel like he played to his best of his
right.
ability. Some of that anger is directed toward himself. Mm-hmm. But to take that and use this racist, yes, it is a racist term used against black men throughout the American experience. Mm-hmm. And the fact that people are now dumbfounded mm-hmm. by the fact that you, man, what happened to the history books, man? I mean,
man, what I know about boy. I mean, growing up, I mean, even as a young kid, I understood that from white people to be a derogatory term, first of all. But then thinking about the psychology of what that does to black men, in the sense that when do I ever get a chance to become
boy.
A man?
Boy.
If all my life I've been boy, that's like a big deal to black men. Don't call me no boy.
Exactly.
You know, as much as we've tried to, you know, gain our manhood or to establish it, that's like that's like a low blow. You know, don't go back to calling us boys.
It's denigrating.
Yeah, exactly. And so what I understand about that term is, yes, like you say, it's very negative. I don't think Romanowski, with his history of racial issue,
yes,
meant it in a loving way. And it should be addressed. And we also should not, you know, turn our eye to the fact that this is doing something psychologically to boys, black men, who never really begin to become men. Because they've always been looked at as little boys,
absolutely,
or little children.
Absolutely. I mean, here are some of our, some of the comments that were made by, and I will say this, these are some of our white brothers and sisters. Because sometimes, you know, I put it up, people just think, you know, this guy is whatever. I'm not going to read their names, but I'll read their comments. It says, "For the love of all that's holy, perhaps that legend needs to leave the 50s and join the rest of us and learn to keep his racist mouth shut."
Well, and then we also think that, like, a lot of people, mm-hmm. and you said this is Facebook, mm-hmm. but they're using all the social medias now. Mm-hmm. You have your grandma on Twitter and your great-great-grandfather on Snapchat. You know what I mean? And it's like some people are just not even ready for the technological age, you know, to be able to convey their ideas in an appropriate way, or to be able to go in there and, you know, disagree with somebody, but also walk away with your dignity intact, you know, not having to feel like you and this person have, you know, lost all connection to each other.
Yeah.
And then, you know, because some of them have that old school way of thinking, it's like they're not even ready to be on the internet with other people who don't look like them expressing their ideas.
You're right, right. And not even prepared for the backlash, right? Because you're putting it out there and people are reading it and people are going to respond to it. Here's another one. "Folks are exposing themselves like this on a regular now. Total disrespect. I love the fact that they come to the light through someone's success. Racist haters at best for this washed out former player." I mean, you got to expect this backlash when you unbelievable is another one. Mm-hmm. Then I had a dude come on and say, strictly, and notice I haven't really even commented at all. and then this guy comes on and he says he was just referring to him as being childish. Mm-hmm. And so I said, no, read it again. You are assuming that. He didn't say he was acting like a boy or childish. The world doesn't revolve around you. Boy, is what he said. Okay. Plus, review Romanowski's, like you pointed out, racist past in the NFL. This is not the first time he has been accused of this. Lastly, I would suggest that you defer. This is where we're getting back to what you talked about with the quote. I suggest that you defer on this one to people that feel deeply hurt historically by such demonizing language. Defer. We were talking earlier about the quote, about being vulnerable and being able to enter into the pain of others. If you don't want to voluntarily do that, then defer. Simply say, you know what? You say that's your experience. That's how it makes you feel. I trust that. That's how it makes you feel. You don't tell me it doesn't make me feel that way.
Yeah.
I mean, how disingenuous is that? Mm-hmm. That's even more hurtful for you to come to me and say, hey, look, man, what you said was, man, that thing hurt me. And I'm like, man, you ain't hurt. Yeah. You're like, what do you mean, man? What do you mean? No, you ain't hurt, man. Grow up, you know.
Get over it. Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't validate any of us, right? Mm-hmm. I mean,
being able to say to somebody else, just deal with the fact that I can't deal with you. You know, that's what you're saying in that moment. If you can't say I defer.
Yeah.
You know, deal with the fact that I. That is deferring. Right.
Yeah,
dealing with the fact that I can't deal with
Absolutely.
You. I'm OK. You're OK.
Yeah.
That's it. Leave it at that.
But beyond that, I'm going to validate that feeling, though. OK, I'm going to say, yeah, because it's what you believe. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to take a position and say what you're feeling is not true, or what you've been hurt by, or what's been said to you. I'm not going to do that because that's not my experience. Mm. You know, I mean, if somebody says to me, if a Native American says to me that they don't like being called Indian. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I mean, well, ain't nothing wrong with that, man. You know, but no, I have to. I'm not a Native American. Mm-hmm. I need to defer on that one and say, guess what? I can volunteer to enter into that pain if I want to. OK, but if I don't, let me defer and say, hey, look, I understand and I respect that.
I think that's a lot. That's a more respectful way to let it go.
You know,
to, like you said, validate the feeling and be able to move on from it.
That's what I was trying to get this, get him to understand. But then we had somebody on here. I don't know, yeah, man. We have somebody on here, man. You might want to read that.
See what we got here.
You know, you might want to read that.
Okay, so after you agree, okay, somebody else says, this is ignorant, and you, sir, are racist. Deleted. with a smiley face. Like, none of the words she used before that sentence was positive, and then she smiles at them. What kind of people are these?
Man, come on, man. You going to go ahead. And matter of fact, she didn't say anything before that. Okay.
All right. She just interjected the comment.
Interject that you are racist.
By
deleting. And then she unfriended me.
I'm tired of reading all your racist commentary.
And
had you heard from this person before this?
Never. Not
so
one
this
time.
This mystery person come out of nowhere and tell you that they deleting you out of their life.
And I'm a racist. never even, you know. Yeah. And
but that's how too, man, that we are like crazily connected to these devices and these ideas and these thoughts about what other people are doing and saying. That is that important to us to unfriend and to delete people off of our Facebook page.
She fixed me.
Yeah, she. I mean, she probably really hit you where. I mean, did you? How much sleep did you lose last night, Mike?
I'm still can't go to sleep. Come on, man. I mean, you know, I'm like this.
Mike, are you okay?
Yeah, man. I need where the tissue at, man. It was like when you went overseas, man. I need some tissue again, man. Listen, if you can't articulate your point. Okay. Oh, let me respond what I said to her. Matter of fact, I said, you call me a racist and unfriend me, so much for dialogue. If you can't articulate your point better than that, have a nice life. See ya. Okay, I mean,
was it that easy for you?
It was easy.
I mean, did you cry as you were?
It was real easy.
Okay,
you know, she beat me to it because I probably would have unfriended her. But you know, it's cool, man. I mean, if you don't like what the things I'm posting, and then we have another person that made a comment, white female, said, "I love how the racist white people delete themselves as if you care." Point well taken, because I don't. I mean, the thing about this is about dialogue, man. This is not. I'm not personally attacking you. You don't have to personally attack me. This is about the exchange of ideas. And what I will say is, now, how can I be a racist? Because I bring out what somebody else said. I didn't say it. I didn't make Romanowski say it. He said it. So I didn't make Sean King say what he said. I'm just sharing information and ideas to have dialogue about it.
And for the record, black people can be racist.
Black people can very much be racist. I know plenty of them. Trust me. Okay. Black people can be racist against black people with green eyes.
By definition, though, I've heard that black people are not in a position to impose or change the life of others through our racist acts. And that also, in turn, puts us in a position to not be racist people.
Well, it is true. We don't hold, and many times we don't hold the keys to certain things as hiring, firing. You know, we don't hold the keys to major decision making. So if you had a person that was prejudiced, that was in that position, yeah, they could wreak havoc on those that they deem less. And so, yeah, percentage wise, although black people are prejudiced, and they are, and if you're listening and you're prejudiced, you need some help. You need to be delivered from being prejudiced, man. We got to love everybody. Yeah, you might need to go to church, go to the aisle, confess, go to the confession booth, tell the priest, I'm prejudiced, I need help, because we can't have that in this world, man. We can't have it in this world, man. And because I bring out the fact that this dude is saying racist things.
That you just brought it to the forefront, not that it was.
I'm a racist. Okay.
Don't shoot the messenger, folks.
Dude, that's just crazy, man. And to think that this young kid has to deal with all of this. I can think about, man, if this was my son, man. I mean,
think about if it was us, you know, like at any time, you know, when we don't feel our best, you know, we've been through stuff. Mm-hmm. We're not in our right, you know, jolly, feelings.
Yeah.
You know, is that the best time to approach and pry for questionings? And
it's not. I mean, he was only at the media out of requirement.
Expect him to respond to that.
He,
you know, just being a human being, expressing real emotions and feelings after a huge loss.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Taking it as personal as he did, because they, you know, he got beat up, man. Yes. I mean, they you know, that defense wasn't no joke.
Came with tenacity.
Man, he couldn't even. Man, I don't even think he could breathe.
And that
man.
Was one of the things they said early on, that they would have trouble with the defensive line.
I'll tell you what, you know, Cam, if you're listening, which I hope you are, I hope every time you pick up your tablet, phone, computer, you get on it, and you listen to a podcast, you listen to One Mic, One Voice.
That's right.
Man, we respect you, man. You have to be you. Keep your head up, just like to anybody. DT, this can be to anybody out there. Mm-hmm. People coming after you, demonizing you, saying things about you and don't even know you.
Don't even know.
Judging you. Don't even know you.
They don't even know that they don't know you.
And bro, but hold on a second.
Isn't they don't know that they don't know you.
They think they know you.
They don't know that they don't know you. Man.
That's great, man. That is true, brother. They don't know.
People assume they've been your friend their whole life, and y'all grew up together, and
don't know you.
No, they don't know. They don't know that they
the
know.
Inner circle is small.
It's small.
Okay, it's real small, and you know, I will say, you know, at the end of the day, folks, it's just a game.
Just a game, and right, like you said, it's just a game, and how. They act like this guy was like doing people's taxes or something on a $1 billion scale or something. Like he just supposed to take this job to the
what Wall Street do?
Yeah, exactly.
We criticize Cam Newton more than we do Wall Street,
right? And they have more of an impact on
Thank
our daily
you.
Lives, right?
Thank you. I mean, this is crazy, man. I mean, it's just a game. Back up, relax. Cam Newton is just a football player. He's more than that to other people, to you and me. He just quarterback. Mm-hmm. I don't know him like that. Wish I did. I think he's a cool brother, but I don't know him like that. But not just Cam. All it's just a game. And the fact that, listen to this, the fact that this these brain injuries now that's coming out, 100 players have now been tested with these brain abnormalities. And the latest, Ken Stabler, you know, the snake that played for yeah, I used to like the snake, man. He wasn't no joke. He was a cool cat off the court, too. He was left-handed. Branch Blintikoff. Yeah, that's before your time, bro. You have to go back and 30-30 it or something. but yeah, they just found out, man, that his brain, man, I think it's CTE or something like that that they're calling it now, that all of these players, man, are – so it's a short-lived – game. It's a dangerous game, but it's just a game. And so I'm gonna say this, DT, back off of Cam Newton.
Let the man
leave him alone.
Let him have his process.
He is a man.
He is a man.
Ain't a boy. He's a man. I know a boy when I see a boy. A boy is young. Boy's got a little school books. Run around, little Tommy run around. That's a boy. Okay. No. That's a man. Okay, and everybody deserves to be treated with dignity and respect. Folks, we're going to take a break, and we're going to be right back.
This is Richard Taplin, host of the Black Box Podcast. Wanted to tell you, thanks again for listening to the One Mic, One Voice. Please be sure to check out their Facebook page, One Mic, One Voice Podcast. And while you're on Facebook, go ahead and stop by Blackened Studios. Also, check out our website, blackestudios.com, to find all the podcasts that record here, including the One Mic, One Voice show, the Black Box, the Elijah Bailey show, the Roxy by Design show, and also the Gamer Stand podcast. Thanks again for all of your support, and remember, it's Blackened.
Welcome back, folks.
We're back.
Oh,
one
man.
One mic, one voice. Beautiful day outside.
Beautiful show.
Beautiful show.
Beautiful show. Man, we talked
about
some.
Beautiful studio.
Listen, we talked about some tough topics.
Wait a minute. Going back, we started off kind of handing on Black history.
Yeah.
We're going to talk a little bit more about that in the last part of the show. Richard Taplin, I called you yesterday. And it was just to check on it, man. I was on Facebook looking at all the different people who have their podcasts up and going now. He's got the Gamer Stand.
Black
and
Roxy by the Studio.
He's got the Elijah Bailey Show. He's got all these different things that are going on. And I know that it's taking up your time. You just been married. You're newlywed. You got a child. And I just wanted to call and check on you, man, just to let you know that I appreciate what you're doing. And this too, is Black history, that you're creating mm-hmm. something for yourself to be able to say, this is the legacy that I left behind. So one time for Richard Taplin and Michael Eric Owens. Man, where do I start? Man, I was sitting there, man, like at the event we went to.
Yeah.
And, you know, you brought all these people together, man, and they listened to you speak. And because of what you have done in your life, you know, mm-hmm. you mentioned in the speech that, you know, over time, we all get a chance, you know, to accomplish some things.
Mm-hmm.
And your accomplishments, man, have stood out. They've drawn my attention. I wanted to be around you more. And I too appreciate the things that you're doing in the community, man, helping me to also be better. And yeah, that's where we at. So,
well, brother, you know, one thing I will say is, you know, while I was preparing to give that speech, and why it was so cool that you came to share that moment with me, man, let me say this, brother. I couldn't help but envision you actually giving that speech. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I couldn't help but envision you giving that speech, man. I said, wow, this brother need to be up here doing his thing, because you're capable.
Yeah.
You're more than capable of delivering a dynamic message. And I believe that that moment needs to happen, man. Those venues need to be opened up to you, because you have the knowledge, the wisdom, the passion. And so, yeah, man, I was just like, man, this is almost like a historical moment, man. I mean, to have my brother here with me.
And like, that was our Black history, you know, and even recognizing the history is that understanding that we're looking to the future as well.
Yeah.
As not, I mean, not just the past. And even right now,
yeah,
and all of these people that we've talked about, Dr. Mm-hmm. King talked about the urgency of now.
Yes.
And I just appreciate him. I just wanted to share that with you.
No, that was beautiful, man. I mean, man, bro, you need the offering plate. Because I'm trying to tell you, man, you get deep, man. I saw Richard over there with his checkbook. He's about to write you something, because you know he don't keep cash on
him. Did he finish it?
But, man, this is, you know, and I love the point you brought out, the point that this is history. And when we close the show and we say history will speak of us, you know, a lot of people, we're not just talking about us. We're talking about all of us. All of us are making history. We're leaving a legacy. Mm-hmm. We're writing a narrative that somebody else is going to listen to mm-hmm. or read about. And that's the beauty. And the beauty, brother, beyond that is when you know that, then you kind of order your steps accordingly.
That's
right.
Right. Right.
Okay. You don't want to have no trifling steps.
Right.
Right. You know, because history will remember.
That's right. Right. They'll dig it all the way.
They
up.
Did. The archivists will reach down deep into the archives of her time. And what will she find? And that's what I'm talking about. That's what One Mic, One Voice is about, man. We have a long range vision, DT. You know that. And our listeners, man, again, shout out all over the world.
World.
And to me, you know, it's a beautiful thing. I mean, man, we have had over 20,000 people listen to our show.
And this is episode number 25.
25.
The quarter century mark.
Oh, man, we are there. We are there. It's 25. Like you say, it's, you know, I'll be satisfied when we get to, you know, 25,000.
Right. But you even that's historic, you know, like I said, like you said, you know, this is the continuation of our legacy.
Yes.
You know, what will we leave behind? What will people be saying about right now?
Yeah.
And we have to keep that in mind.
Oh, absolutely.
For our listeners, and I don't know if I can share this just yet, but we have some publications coming up soon, right?
Yes, we do.
And the thing about this podcast is that this is just a snippet, a peeking into the mind of what's possible. But, you know, when we're able to sit down and put ideas together on paper, when we're writing, we're publishing more You guys are going to get a real feel and sense of who we are and what we're trying to do.
Absolutely.
And it's going to be better for all of us. But we do need to be writing more. We need to be having these conversations. But this can't be it. We also have to be able to pick up the books and read into the information in more detail and into more clarity into what we're actually trying to say behind the message.
Absolutely. We're coming out with it, folks, shortly. And we want to move the conversation forward, and we want to be part of creating a better world, a better society, a more inclusive world.
Or that you and your friends are having more meaningful conversations.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely, man. And but no, that was a good, you like just toss that in there, man. What's you know, that? you were like Steve
Kevin Durant.
No, man. You were like what was, yeah, Curry.
Steph Curry.
That's who you were like, man. You just stood back at the 3-point line and just like bam, close your eyes and made it come through, man. But I want to segue just for a little bit. I think we need to take another break. And let's do that.
All right.
We're going to take another break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit about a legend, Mr. Ralph
Ellison.
We'll be right back.
The great.
Join us as we celebrate the 3rd annual night with Ralph Ellison, February 20th at the Oklahoma History Center at 6 p.m. A night filled with entertainment, live music, dramatic dance, and readings from Ellison's work. To become a sponsor or to purchase your tickets, go online to RalphEllisonFoundation.org or call 405-788-0566. Again, 405-788-0566. A night with Ralph Ellison is sponsored by the Ralph Ellison Foundation, Perry Publishing and Broadcasting, Oklahoma City University, Oklahoma City University School of Law, Full Circle Bookstore, Fred Jones Family Foundation, AT&T, Bank First, Alliance for Economic Development, Center for Economic Development Law, and Blacken Studio.
Welcome back, folks. We're going to dive right into this thing now. Ralph Ellison, you know, I had the privilege, DT, the other week to go on the open mic show, the local talk show here, Perry Publishing and Broadcasting, one of our sponsors, to talk about Ralph Ellison and just to talk about his legacy. Mm-hmm. Born here in Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm. Hometown boy.
His father died at the age of 3. His father was carried ice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, back in them days, you know, we think about, you know, how technology has come, and we go to the refrigerator and get ice, right? Back in those days, he was carrying ice, and he used to take young Ralph with him. And on this particular day, he was taking ice upstairs and slipped. Mm. And the ice, of course, you know, punctured some of his organs, and he ended up dying. And from that, he was a breadwinner. Mm-hmm. And from that stage on, young Ellison basically was in poverty. Mm-hmm. From home to home to home. Man, it was, when you really read, Emerging Genius is written by Professor Jackson. His name is eluding me right now. Richard, you might want to look that up, but it's Emergence of a Genius. And to me, there's several biographies that have been written about Mr. Ellison. And Jackson is his last name. It's going to come back to me. And this is probably the most definitive and I would say accurate one. And, you know, it's when you look at his life, born Lawrence Jackson. There you go. Lawrence Jackson, Emergence of a Genius. Is that correct? Okay. I should know a little something about Mr. Ellison. I was in the ballpark. He was born in 1914, and you think about that time period. I mean, it was rough.
It was real.
Okay.
Real rough.
You know, and we do know that he went to Douglas High School, Douglas graduate. He went to Tuskegee, spent a year there, year and a half, 2 years. He went to New York for summer, and to earn enough to come back to pay for his tuition. Okay. And he ran into Langston Hughes, you know, and Langston, they built a really great relationship.
Wow.
Yeah. That's deep.
Oh my God.
That's deep. Wow. Now, him, Langston, I mean, Richard Wright, I mean, that was the trio. And I try to tell people that, you know, he wrote one of the greatest books. It's been called the greatest, one of the 50 greatest books of the 20th century, Invisible Man. Not The Invisible Man, Invisible Man. It perturbs me when I see advertisement that says The Invisible Man.
That was a totally different book, huh?
Yeah, in a movie. It's Invisible Man. That's an important point because he's speaking about the self. He was a musician. I mean, he played the trumpet. He was a artist. He was a sculptor. He was a photographer. I mean, he was a Renaissance dude. And he never started out to write, but Wright was really, Richard Wright was the one that kind of, you know, pushed him into writing a story one time because he couldn't do it. And Ellison said, I can't write a story. And Richard Wright said, as much as you argue with me, you should be able to write a story.
You should be a professional.
Exactly. And so that's how he got into it. And it took him, get this, you know how many years it took him to write Invisible Man? I'm gonna tell you because y'all look like y'all.
We don't know.
Yeah, you look like man, I ain't gonna guess. I'm on air. How you gonna make me guess, man? Seven years. Now, some of us can't sit down for 2 hours. And this man spent 7 years of his life writing this book. I mean, that's dedication. That's commitment. That's focus. How do you even stay with the storyline?
I think it's beautiful too, because like as the story is evolving, you know, so are you, and yeah, so are the characters.
Absolutely.
So is everything else about your life and everything.
Absolutely. You
want, your influences even to contribute to give the story more life. I think even probably made it what it is today. Yeah, you know, man, that most influential book. 20th century.
Absolutely. And he studied the greats, man. I mean, Ellison was painstakingly committed to his craft. I mean, he as a musician played the scales of their instrument. He wrote out his sentences. I mean, he studied Dostoevsky, and he studied others that were in his genre. He studied those, wrote their sentences out one by one, analyzing not only the grammar but the flow and the harmony, because Ellison is known as a blues writer because his jazz plays within his writing. He uses so many correlations with jazz and music and the rhythm of what he does. I mean, here was a dude that was serious about expressing himself. How many of us today are that committed to writing? You know, I have my own publishing company. I have people come to me all the time that want to publish something, and I'm like, nah, that's not gonna happen. Okay, it's not gonna happen. Because you have not studied your craft. You're not committed to learning, to meticulously learning, you know, the flow of language and of understanding and creativity. Everyone has a story, but everyone shouldn't be writing it down. Let me put it like that. I mean, you might need a ghostwriter.
So we have editors and other people like that. You can sit across from them and tell them the story. And they'll put it down.
Hey, they got that dragon now. You can just speak it out or something like that.
It would be great if we all could, you know, narrate our own story because that'd leave a lot of the riffraff out, you know.
Man.
But, wow.
You know, I mean, you're so correct in the fact that, yes, we need to get all of our stories out, man. I tell people all the time, if you're a grandparent, write your story. Because I said it would be amazing to me right now. Think about this. If you could read your great-great-grandfather's story, if you had that book where he talked about what it was like as a child, how he grew up, what challenges he faced, what was his admiration for you and for this country? Yeah. Wouldn't that be, that would be priceless.
Because a lot of us have lost that history, and the fact it's that gone. We can't even go, you know, back a couple generations it's and gone. Say, this was my grandfather, this is my uncle.
It's gone.
And, but so it would be nice for us to be able to start to get that information in order so that they can get a peek into our lives.
Oh, and absolutely.
See what it was like for it us in our own words.
Absolutely.
In our own interpretation. Absolutely. Than it being somebody else's, you know, kind of view of what they thought happened.
You have to leave a written narrative of who you are and what you are. Mm. It is valuable. You might say, well, you know, hey, nobody really cares about. Yes, yes, you have people that will pick that up in the distant future and read it, and it will mean something. What Ralph Ellison left us, he left us Invisible Man. He left us his short stories. He left us articles. He left us because Ralph, you know, he was a protest writer. I mean, he wrote for the communist newspaper, like a lot of black writers did at that time, because the communists were the only ones that were advocating for equal rights for blacks. Mm-hmm. And so he got involved with that, man. And some of his early writings, man, they're right on. And if you criticized him, oh, he went to the pen and paper, and he just whipped you around. I mean, we should post some of the stuff on our Facebook page, man, and his response to some of the criticisms, and because he was skilled. I mean, his articulation from the mind to the paper was unmeasured. I mean, you couldn't compare. I mean, you step back. You know, I remember they were talking about Ellison was at he was on some panel and they were it was some talking about race and this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, he loves cigars. Right. Mm-hmm. So he on the panel back in those days, you smoked anywhere. Right. So he on the panel, he got his cigar. Mm-hmm. He's sitting there and somebody asked him a question and he wasn't even paying attention. And so he looked up and he said, is that question for me? And then he said until all of you realize that you are all part white, okay, and you are all part black, you can't go anywhere else until you figure that out.
Wow. Okay. That was that question. I can only imagine that.
Like, what is the guy? Is that, like, is that question for me?
Wow.
I mean, it's a real, real deep cat, man. And Dr. John Callahan, the executor, literary executor of his estate, he came for our first gala, and we're going to plug that here in a minute before we close the show. But he came and he spoke at OCU, and he talks about he met Mr. Ellison, and Ralph and Fanny, his wife, were living up in New York at the time. And Miss Ellison said, hey, if you ever up in New York, come by the house. And so here's this iconic figure, right? So he was just going through, I think he had graduated and so he was up in New York and he was invited over. And he said when he sat down, you know, Mr. Ellison had some Irish whiskey. Now, John Callahan, of course, is Irish name, right? So he has some Irish whiskey, he had a couple cigars. And, and so Callahan said when he sat on the couch, he said what he sat facing the window. And he said what happened was the sun was coming through the window in such a way that it blinded him. And he couldn't even see Ellison sitting across from him, but he was so embarrassed to say anything to this.
Wow.
So
wow.
He didn't say nothing. That's like if I'm sitting across from Dr. Right. Gates, man, and I'm just blind. I'm just going to sit there. I can't say nothing.
You
don't
want to be embarrassed, but you don't want to.
Wow. I'm in Dr. Gates' presence. Right, right. That's all I'm concerned about, right? And
Can't see nothing.
Right? Can't see nothing, right? So he said years later, he said that he was over, he was with him again. And he said to him, Ralph, he said, I really appreciate the first time, you know, we met. He said, wow, he said, you went out and you got Irish whiskey for me. And he said, Ralph looked at him and said, I didn't do that for you. You think you're the only one that likes whiskey? But I mean, you know, the notion, man, that we can be at sometimes, man, so self-absorbed. But but it's interesting. His life, man, and his legacy, and what he means today. So many people still feel in the shadows, still feel marginalized, still feel like their voice doesn't matter. And I mean, you work with young kids every day, DT, and you know, we're trying to instill in them that they do have a voice, that they do matter. That's why Ellison's work is still so relative, the struggle for acknowledgement and being seen and heard.
I'm going to take it a step deeper.
Go.
For you.
Go.
Ralph Ellison brought the One Mic, One Voice show together.
That is true.
Is that a true statement?
That's a true statement.
Because when I met you originally, you were there as director of the Ralph Ellison Library.
That's
my
correct.
Neighborhood. I was very familiar with the yes. area. And that partnership, me being able to see you as somebody in the community doing something.
Yes.
And, you know, in Ralph Ellison's name, honoring him and his legacy, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And here we are today, you know, talking about Ralph Ellison's legacy, but also in the same sense, understanding that the impact that this man had is the reason that you and I are able to sit here today amongst each other, having these conversations about him.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's
so
deep.
I just that let you know how full circle it comes around.
I'm going to go a little deeper.
Okay. A little deeper.
The only reason why I'm in Oklahoma City is because of Ralph Ellison.
Wow.
I didn't know a soul in Oklahoma. A colleague of mine sent me the job. She's from Chicago, and she knew I was a Ellisonian and loved Ellison. And that's what got me to Oklahoma.
Wow.
Can you go deeper than that, Rich? There you go with the fist again.
Impact, man.
Power to the people. Impact. I mean, yeah, it's a wonderful story, man. And just think about legacy, as you said. This man is still empowering people, although he is gone. I mean, his work and who he is a big part of us knowing each other, being here, just like you, everything you said, brother. So, folks, when you're thinking about legacy, when you think about who you're touching, you know, who you're in, we don't even know Ellison personally.
Right.
You might not even know. You cannot imagine, even after we move on and we pause, if we are committed to what is right and what is good, and trying to uplift the least among us, somebody, DT, somebody on down the way is going to say, you know what? That Deshaun Thornton.
Yeah,
okay. He was on to something. And so, man, that's a wonderful way to end the show, man. I mean, legacy. And, you know, today is a new day, folks. You know, do somebody right. Right? Okay. What do you think, DT?
Man, I'm kind of lost for words after that beautiful monologue you gave a second ago. I'm like, wow. But like you said, that's a beautiful way to close the show. We see now how even in our relationships, we are connected to each other in our lives now and as we go forward and as we pause, as Mike said. So use today to your advantage. We don't have forever to get things done. So
tomorrow you got to write a new story, okay?
And tomorrow is not promised. So start the story today.
You know that's right. Because history will speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, a scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time. And what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we solved nothing and remain a divided people? Yes, history will speak of us. Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show. Today's broadcast is being brought to you by Blacken Studios. To learn more about Blacken Studios, please visit them at blackenstudios.com or visit them on their Facebook page, Blacken Studios. Today's broadcast is also being brought to you by Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. To learn more about Perry Publishing and Broadcasting, please visit their website at perrypublishingandbroadcasting.net.
The opinions of the One Mic, One Voice show do not reflect the views of Blacken Studios or Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show.